exist not, nor shall they ever be organized forever and ever. If thou separate from me, thou art a negation, a mere reasoning and derogation from me, unobjecting in cruel spite and malice and envy. But my emanation, alas, will become my contrary. O thou negation, I will continually compel thee to be invisible to any but whom I please, and when, and where, and how I please. And never, never shalt thou be organized, but as a distorted and reversed reflection in the darkness, and in the non-entity. Nor shall that which is above ever descend into thee, but thou shalt be a non-entity forever. And if any enter into thee, thou shalt be an unquenchable fire, and he shall be a never-dying worm, mutually tormented by those that thou tormentest, a hell and despair forever and ever. The outline of identity. From every one of the four regions of human majesty, there is an outside spread without, and an outside spread within, beyond the outline of identity both ways, which meet in one. An orbed void of doubt, despair, hunger, and thirst, and sorrow. The sorrows of Albion. Horse turned the starry wheels, rending away in Albion's loins, beyond the night of Beulah, in a dark and unknown night, outstretched his giant beauty on the ground in pain and tears. His children, exiled from his breast, pass to and fro before him. His birds are silent on his hills. Flocks die beneath his branches. His tents are fallen. His trumpets and the sweet sound of his harp are silent on his clouded hills that belch forth storms and fire. His milk of cows and honey of bees and fruit of golden harvest is gathered in the scorching heat and in the driving rain. Where once he sat, he weary walks in misery and pain. His giant beauty and perfection fallen into dust. Till from within his withered breast, grown narrow with his woes, the corn is turned to thistles and the apples into poison, the birds of song to murderous crows, his joys to bitter groans, the voices of children in his tents to cries of helpless infants, and self-exiled from the face of light and shine of morning, in the dark world, a narrow house, he wanders up and down, seeking for rest and finding none, and hidden far within, his eon weeping in the cold and desolated earth. Oh, what is life? What is man? Oh, what is death? Wherefore are you, my children, natives in the grave, to where I go? Or are you born to feed the hungry ravenings of destruction, to be the sport of accident, to waste in wrath and love a weary life, in brooding cares and anxious labors that prove but chaff? Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, I have forsaken thy courts, thy pillars of ivory and gold, thy curtains of silk and fine linen, thy pavements of precious stones, thy walls of pearl and gold, thy gates of thanksgiving, thy windows of praise, thy clouds of blessing, thy cherubims of tender mercy, stretching their wings sublime over the little ones of Albion. O human imagination, O divine body, I have crucified. I have turned my back upon thee into the wastes of moral law. There Babylon is builded in the waste, founded in human desolation. O Babylon, thy watchman stands over thee in the night. Thy severe judge all the day long proves thee, O Babylon, with provings of destruction, with giving thee thy heart's desire. But Albion is cast forth to the potter, his children to the builders, to build Babylon, because they have forsaken Jerusalem. The walls of Babylon are souls of men, her gates the groans of nations, her towers are the miseries of once happy families. Her streets are paved with destruction, her houses built with death. Her palaces with hell and the grave, her synagogues with torments of ever-hardening despair, squared and polished with cruel skill. Yet thou wast lovely as the summer cloud upon my hills, when Jerusalem was thy heart's desire, in times of youth and love. Thy sons came to Jerusalem with gifts. She sent them away with blessings on their hands and on their feet, blessings of gold and pearl and diamond. Thy daughters sang in her courts. They came up to Jerusalem. They walked before Albion in the exchanges of London. Every nation walked, and London walked in every nation, mutual in love and harmony. Albion covered the whole earth. England encompassed the nations, mutual each within other's bosom in visions of regeneration. Jerusalem covered the Atlantic mountains and the Erythrean, from bright Japan and China to Hesperia, France and England. Mount Zion lifted his head in every nation under heaven, and the Mount of Olives was beheld over the whole earth. The footsteps of the Lamb of God were there, but now no more. No more shall I behold him.
And alas, one of us has had his FCC license revoked. One of us will never again. Dare we go again? We have to drag our very private personal business out so everybody in Northern and Central California can hear and perhaps hold it against us if they don't.
Well, I'm just trying to be open with the audience, trying to let it all be one.
Open the gates of glory. Open the gates of light. I'm freezing to death here.
By the nine gods he swore that the great house of Tarquin should suffer wrong no more.
Now see how all that complaining about not having scripts, and you've got every imaginable script memorized.
By the nine gods he swore it, and named a trysting day.
Okay, now wait, name the nine gods.
He bade his messengers ride forth.
Now,
east and west and
name
south.
Name the nine gods.
And north.
Now wait a minute.
To some.
Name the nine.
The Olympians, you ignoramus.
Vitruvius.
Two.
Nemo.
Three.
Habulo.
Four.
Atragon.
Five.
Memimbon.
Six.
And Sambo.
Seven. All right, we can continue.
Now, why couldn't you do that in the beginning, in the announcement, where we had it all laid out and you were supposed to do that? No!
Did you write this short book?
The second generation of gods, the first being the Titans, the second the Olympians.
To eastward and to westward have spread the Tuscan band. Nor house nor dovecote in Crustumeriums.
Nor house nor fence nor dovecote.
Ostia hath wasted all the plain. Astur hath stormed Janiculum and the stout guard crossed them.
They were too stout to defend themselves.
What if Rob chokes to death right here in the air, thereby providing no place for us to do the paid
work? I weest in all the Senate, there was not heart so bold, that sore it ached and fast it beat when that ill news was told.
This week in San Francisco,
we have heard the trumpets blast!
All right, that's it. Everybody's off, except you, Rob.
Shame on the false Etruscan who lingers in his home while Porsena of Clusium is on the march for Rome.
Exactly what's going on Saturday night and where it is and why they
heap plenty big powwow and palaver Saturday night. And tomorrow, during the day at Arto, Brian Goggin will give another salon with a delicious of food and performances and art. Starting at 3 o'clock.
Talking about this event that's coming up.
Well, it's a big
right
event, folks. Whoa.
All right. And I'll put you...
Me?
Right in the middle. Now, is this reverb setting suitable to you, or would you like something a little different? Hello? Oh, my God, I accidentally cut Rob off.
Now you've got no one.
And now I've got no one. All right, everybody's back. Okay, let's go.
Here we go. We're live again. Whoops, but I should put my headphones on. Hey, I could actually...
Is that you, Rob?
Is Rob back now?
Oh, your little...
Is that Rob?
Everybody's here once we take our net and cast it wide. But there's something coming up if you wish to support Radio Valencia and meet many of the RV DJs. That'll be at 443 Broadway in San Francisco. That's up in North Beach. Saturday, February 28th, 2026. Yes. Bunk Panel and the Mutants of Mabuhay Gardens. Really, by attending this show, you will be supporting Radio Valencia. You will even, by extension, be supporting this show. There will be a video presentation, an oral history panel, a zine and record swap, plus Mutants performing after the panel. And it's wheelchair accessible. So get those chairs a-rolling down to 443 Broadway on Saturday, February 28th. I Hate Records and V. Vale of Research Publications and Search and Destroy will be vending following the panel. Tickets are on sale now. Just go to www.radiovalencia.fm and the whole shebang is brought to you by Radio Valencia and SF Music Week. That's right. On Saturday, February 28th, 2026, San Francisco's counterculture history returns to its birthplace to mark a historic milestone, the 50th anniversary of punk rock in the city and the legacy of the venue where it all began. Co-presented by Radio Valencia in association with SF Music Week and co-produced by Steve DePace from Flipper, and Michael Rosenberg, a.k.a. John Hell of Radio Valencia, the legendary Mabuhay Gardens. Remember that? The Fab Mab. And on Broadway, at 435 Broadway, we'll host Flipper and Friends, a celebration of 50 years of punk in San Francisco. This day-long multimedia takeover serves as a high-octane concert and a historical reincarnation honoring the moment the tremors of the 1970s underground that appeared out of nowhere first shook North Beach, then San Francisco, then the world. The legacy of the Fab Mab from its unassuming location on Broadway, the Mabuhay Gardens became ground zero for a cultural explosion that reverberated globally, shaking the noosphere. Under the guidance of Dirk Dirksen, the uncompromising promoter and ringmaster whose irreverent MC style turned the venue into a laboratory for rebellion. The Fab Mab nurtured a scene that was confrontational, artistic, and defiantly independent. The venue launched from, I guess, from the dead Kennedys, from Joe Biafra, and from the Avengers, Crime, the Nuns, Negative Trend, and Flipper, establishing a uniquely San Francisco sound that blended radical politics with satire and more. Now, to go over the basics one more time. The event is co-produced by Steve DePace from Flipper and Michael Rosenberg, a.k.a. John Hill of Radio Valencia, and hosted by Tom Watson. The celebration is split into two distinct segments: an afternoon of oral history and an evening of live, rambunctious, noisy music. First, the afternoon at, well, you know, spiritually at the Mabuhay Gardens, with a video presentation and an oral history panel at 2 o'clock p.m., and this runs to about 7 p.m. How much does it cost to get into this shindig? $20. That might seem a lot, but buy a burrito with that $20 and you'll hardly have anything left at the price everything is these days in Trump world. And after 7 p.m., free. Pay that pair of sawbucks in advance. And the day of the show, $25 at the door. This location, as I said, is wheelchair accessible. The presentation at 3 o'clock p.m., rock historian Richie Unterberger presents a video archive of bands performing songs from 1976 to 1987, followed by a short Q&A. A panel discussion will then rumble onto the stage at 4:30 p.m., a rare gathering of original scene architects, moderated by Unterberger, featuring Steve DePace of Negative Trend and Flipper, Penelope Houston of The Avengers, Henry Rosenthal of Crime, and there at a table will be, as one might expect, V. Vale of Research and Search and Destroy, and Joe Rees from Target Video. They will engage in a deep dive oral history of the 1976-1987 era. Mutants will perform at the Fab Mab following the panel discussion. Zine record and clothing sales, ongoing from 2 p.m., will take place, and you can leave with an armload of swag that you'll be so glad you have. A curated market featuring V. Vale and a variety of local DIY vendors, including SF Punk Record Store, I Hate Records, and Punk Majesty. I don't know, but you could probably buy a lot of the research publications themselves if Vale brings them. The Angry Women one, the One of the Body, the even Pranks, even Incredibly Strange Films one that I contributed to. They will perhaps be there, but this information is not in my grasp. Still, it's something to hope. After all, he wants to sell those things. Then the gallery. Throughout the venue, rare photography, flyers, and video projections will pay tribute to the bands and fallen brothers and sisters who defined the area, including Dirk Dirksen, D.H. Peligro, Bruce Luce, and Howie Klein. So, it's Saturday, February 28th, 2026. Coming really soon. The venue, 435 Broadway, San Francisco, California, Mabuhay Gardens. The ages, well, you can't take little kids to this, and they'd be bored anyway. No, it's 21 and over. Tickets, well, you can buy them in the afternoon at the Fab Mab, or go online to https://tinyurl.com/FabMab. Fab Mab in this case actually is capitalized in upper case. Sponsored by Tony's Napolitana Pizza. Free pizza for those who come in the first hour, so don't lag. Taste the pizza, disa pizza for the touch of old Napoli. Also sponsored by Hate Street Voice and Heaps Normal. Now, the Mabuhay Gardens was a seminal San Francisco music venue that became the epicenter of the city's punk rock movement. Under the guidance of Dirk Dirksen, it hosted hundreds of groundbreaking performances that helped define punk rock in America and establish San Francisco, as it did, as one of the world's most influential punk cities. And so, if you have any further questions, look for more announcements by Michael Rosenberg, the head of this station, Radio Valencia.
Tell us about the Café This, a little bit about its history and how it's laid out, and what your expectations are from the paid rehearsal, which will be... Oh, is that the name of
the band, or is it band or dare not speak its name?
It's got nothing to do with that.
Okay. So it's just paid rehearsal.
It's just the paid rehearsal, all-star. It's like, you know how sometimes when these musical groups, they get together to do jams, and there'll be somebody from this group and somebody from that
jam
group. They're all major individuals in major groups, but they get together and they form what?
In a minor way, right?
They form a super group. That's what.
Super group.
That's what you can call it. And we'll be there.
It'll be right here at Café This. 122 4th Street on Saturday night.
That's 4th Street.
Super.
A super jam by a super jam group. These will be participants These will be participants from both Over the Puzzling Edge of Evidence and Puzzling Over the Evidence Edge group. People from both those groups will be there. Hal?
Yeah.
Who's that?
The mouse.
Hal will be there, of course. He'll be dressed in a dress and have a wig on and be doing Aunt Bertha probably the whole time.
Yeah, I did do that, actually. The only time I ever dressed up as Aunt Bertha.
That's right. The guy above you. Look for the guy above you.
And he'll have...
That'll be Hal.
He'll have a phone in which you can call him by cellular phone.
That's right.
That'll hand out the audience.
Oh, I forgot all about that.
And you call...
Oh, give that number out. Now, you folks listening who aren't going to be able to make it, unfortunately, take down this phone number. You will be able to call into our live performance at the Café This. Take down this number right now.
707.
And you will be able to ask either Hal or Aunt Bertha, whichever one he or she is at the moment, a question.
That's right.
Or make a comment or a criticism. If you want, just make a blind criticism. You won't be able to... see what's going on, but just criticize him anyway.
Well, what you could do is you could play the tape of tonight and just imagine it happening.
That's right. I'm sure one of us eventually will think of that. We'll think of bringing the tape from tonight and playing it there, which will be very, very interesting. You have drinks. You have all sorts of beverages there. You have what? You have coffee, tea, milk, and... what else?
Well, it's coffee shop stuff, but there's no decaf.
There's no decaf. That's good, because I want people up and buzzing for this. This is going to be out of sight and over the top.
That's right. Over the top of Evidence Now Edge.
And we're going to start at 10. We're going to be there live. This is your chance, all you radio people, to see how old we are and what we look like.
Especially when you get up in the old lady uniform.
And I'll tell you, I remember some things pretty far back, too. We'll talk about the 50s. Huh?
Golden age.
We'll talk about the 40s. Huh?
Talk about the golden age.
We'll talk about the 30s. Huh?
Vital, yeah. Vibrant.
What are they laughing at? It's not funny to be this old.
My car is dead. It's like a symbol, you know? Here it comes, death. First your car, then you. I think that's how it goes.
After 3 years of being open.
But I digress.
And playing over the edges on...
You can trust your car to the man who wears the star. The big red Texaco star.
That's right.
Power goes off right at that moment.
We are not fooling. This is it. Your chance to see, well, whatever this is.
It's a lot. But it already happened, unlike this event coming up on the 28th at the Fab Mab.
It's going to be, I would say, uh-oh, just a minute.
Uh-oh.
We got a blues player coming
up. A blues player? That would be nice.
Integrated. I talked in Utah.
Integrated circuits. A day at the circuits.
Oh, you know when that guy called me at 3:20 and said to turn over the tape? Well, I looked at it and it was still going, so I left it. Always a mistake.
I'll say.
But I like him to be full, like Chuck full right to the end. So I let it go, and now I just realized that it did run out maybe 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 minutes ago. And I missed that entire rehearsal of that speech that we're going to do about you telling him about everything. So if you want to start at the beginning again.
What page am I on?
Let's see. You're on page 122, 4th Street.
And we're going to hear the blues as indicated.
That's the home page.
If you haven't been there, get there.
The blues.
And don't be a straggler because there's no decaf.
Of Howlin' Wolf.
Saturday night, 9 o'clock. We can't give you the front.
Me and my baby. Take a sentimental journey, you know, all alone. Me and my baby. Take a sentimental journey, man, all alone. We gonna leave this old John the Conqueror route all behind. Thing. We want to be all alone. We gonna enjoy a good thing. We want to be all alone. We gonna leave this town, leave old John the Conqueror behind. We gonna take sentimental Johnny man all alone. You know we going. California, you know. You know we going way down on the water cord. We gonna take the sentimental Johnny, and he wants to be all alone. No one. In this whole round world with me. Then go for me too, baby.
Yeah.
Take a sentimental Johnny now, baby. Leave all this old backbiting behind. feel so happy. Me and my baby all alone. We together. Yes, I feel so happy. Me and my baby all alone. Be all alone by myself, not people. Just as happy as a baby boy.
It's we will continue the script.
Puzzling over the evidence
12.
Edge.
Sabrina, there are two primal forces in the universe that may... Oh, that's a boring part.
Yeah, that's...
Skip that part. Get to where it gets dirty. Elektra is normal.
Ah! Oh, ow. You suck.
Sabrina, please help me.
Too much music. Stop. Stop. Yes, I suck. Okay.
But remember, only one of us is gay.
Hal, recite some Lewis Carroll, quick! It's turning into a pop music show.
You suck.
All right, special. Uh-huh. By that you mean no one was watching the network we were on.
Nobody was watching our program.
Precisely.
Now it's better.
So we're going to an all soft rock format, right?
Yeah. Well, there are certain listeners out there who, if they've stayed with us, know the significance of this song in this particular group.
No, yeah. I never listen.
It's the same old shit.
I just talk
show.
On it.
You don't see I'm the one.
Yes, it's the show. All rock, all the time. Instrumental, vocals, soft rock, hard rock, gum chewing thug rock.
I know nothing about the Saturday show.
There we are. There I am. Am I here? Fair use. Beneath the trees.
Can you plug your Saturday show?
Got it all on tape here. Don't worry about your tape.
Okay, we're on stakeout now.
All right.
Mmm, a delicious steak. I wish I could have that, but of course it's too expensive. Instead, this is the moment of the Lewis Carroll recitation. The sun was shining on the sea, shining with all his might. He did his very best to make the billows smooth and bright. And this was odd, because it was the middle of the night. The moon was shining sulkily, because she thought the sun had got no business being there after the day was done. How very rude of him, she said, to come and spoil the fun. The sea was wet as wet could be. The air was dry as dry. You could not see a cloud, because no clouds were in the sky. No birds were flying overhead. There were no birds to fly. The walrus and the carpenter were walking close at hand. They wept like anything to see such quantities of sand. If this were only cleared away, they said, it would be grand. If seven maids with seven mops swept it for half a year, do you suppose, the walrus said, that they could get it clear? I doubt it, said the carpenter, and shed a bitter tear. Oh, oysters, come and walk with us, the walrus did beseech. A pleasant walk, a pleasant talk, along the briny beach, we cannot do with more than four to give a hand to each. The eldest oyster looked at them, but never a word he said. The eldest oyster winked his eye and shook his heavy head, meaning to say he did not choose to leave the oyster bed. But four young oysters hurried up, all eager for a treat. Their coats were brushed, their faces washed, their shoes were clean and neat. And this was odd, because, you know, they hadn't any feet. Then four more oysters hurried up, and then another four, and thick and fast they came at last, and more and more and more, all hopping through the frothy waves and scrambling to the shore. The walrus and the carpenter walked on a mile or so until they came unto a spot conveniently low, and there the little oysters stood before them in a row. "The time has come," the walrus said, "to speak of many things, of shoes and ships and sailing wax, of cabbages and kings, and why the sea is boiling hot, and whether pigs have wings. But wait a bit," the oysters cried, "before we have our chat, for some of us are out of breath, and all of us are fat." "No hurry," said the carpenter. They thanked him much for that. "A loaf of bread," the walrus said, "is what we chiefly need. Pepper and vinegar, besides, are very good indeed. Now, if you're ready, oysters dear, we can begin to feed." "But not on us," the oysters cried, turning a little blue. "After such kindness, that would be a dismal thing to do." "The night is fine," the walrus said. "Do you admire the view? It was so kind of you to come, and you are very nice." The carpenter said nothing but, "Cut us another slice. I wish you were not half so deaf. I've had to ask you twice." "It seems a shame," the walrus said, "to play them such a trick, after we brought them out so far and made them trot so quick." The carpenter said nothing but, "The butter spread too thick." "I weep for you," the walrus said. "I deeply sympathize." With sobs and tears, he sorted out those of the largest size, holding his pocket handkerchief before his streaming eyes. "Oh, oysters," said the carpenter, "we've had a pleasant run. Shall we be trotting home again?" But answer came there none. And this was scarcely odd, because they'd eaten every one.
"Now, sir,
the show sure is different now.
The saucer you say you saw, sir. This saucer, sir, your saucer. The saucer, you saw a flying saucer,
saw
sir.
A flying
sir,
saucer.
You saw a flying saucer.
It was a flying saucer.
Now, the saucer you say you saw, sir. This saucer that you say you saw was a flying saucer.
It's not a flying saucer.
I do not like green eggs, I do not like them, sir.
Damn, I am. And I don't eat green eggs
in hand. There you go. You give these listeners a cure. Take it.
I do not like them. I do not like them on the show. I do not like them in a room.
When leaves of brown come a-tumbling down, remember, in September, in the rain. The setting sun became a dying ember in September. In the rain.
There was not...
There are many volumes between you and the singer.
Wow. So gate and fast it beat when that ill news was told. Forthwith uprose the consul, uprose the fathers all. In haste they girded up their gowns and hied them to the wall.
Yeah, yeah, whatever. Now let's go do some more electoral college stuff.
They held a council, standing before the river gate. Short time was there, ye well may guess, for musing and debate.
Okay, let's talk to caller number
out
7 again.
Out spake the consul round. The bridge must straight go down, for since Janiculum is lost, what hope to save the town?
Okay, I give up. What hope?
There's
just
only
then
one.
The scout came flying all wild with haste and fear.
Scout, one of the most popular stunt dogs in Hollywood.
To arms, to arms, Sir Consul. Lars Porsena is here.
Are we
on the low hills to westward, the consul fixed his eye. And he saw the swarthy swarm of dust rise fast along the sky.
Or storm of dust.
But the consul's speech was sad, and the consul's brow was low.
And darkly looked he at the wall, and darkly at the foe. Their van will be upon us before the bridge is down, and since Janiculum is lost, what hope to save the town? Then out stepped brave Horatius, the captain of the gate. To every man upon this earth their death cometh, soon or late. And how can man die better than by facing fearful odds for the ashes of his fathers and the temples of his gods? Hew down the bridge, Sir Consul, with all the speed ye may. I, with two more to help me, will hold the foe in prey. In play, that is to say, in yon straight path, a thousand may well be stopped by three. The Duke of Wellington, many centuries later, doubted that this strategy was a plausible one. Now who will stand at either hand and keep the bridge with me? Then out spake Spurius Lartius. A Ramnian proud was he. Lo, I will abide at thy right side and keep the bridge with thee. Then out spake strong Herminius of Titian blood was he. I will abide at thy left side and keep the bridge with thee. Horatius, spoke the council, as thou sayest, so let it be. And straight against the great array forth went the dauntless three. Now, while the three were tightening their harness on their backs, the consul was the foremost man to take in hand an axe. And fathers mixed with commons seized hatchet bar and crow and smote upon the planks above and loosed the props below. Meanwhile, the Tuscan army, right glorious to behold, came flashing back the noonday light, rank upon rank in surges bright of a broad sea of gold. 4,000 trumpets sounded a peal of warlike glee as that great host with measured tread and spears advanced and ensigns spread rolled slowly toward the bridge's head where stood the dauntless three. The three stood calm and silent and looked upon the foes, and a great shout of laughter from all the vanguard rose. Forthwith Three chiefs came spurring before that great array. To earth they sprang, their swords they drew. They lifted high their shields and flew to win the narrow way. Aunus from green Tifernum, lord of the Hill of Vines, and Seius, whose 800 slaves sicken in Ilva's mines, and Picus, long to Clusium, vassal in peace and war, who led to fight his Umbrian powers from that grey crag where, girt with towers, the fortress of Nequinum lowers o'er the pale waves of Gnar. Stout Lartius hurled down Aunus into the stream beneath. Herminius struck at Seius and clove him to the teeth. At Picus, brave Horatius darted one fiery thrust, and the proud Umbrian's gilded arms clashed in the bloody dust. Then Acnus of Falerii rushed on the Roman three, and Laustulus of Urgo, the rover of the sea, and Aruns of Volsinium, who slew the great wild boar. The great wild boar that had his den amidst the reeds of Cosa's fen, and wasted fields and slaughtered men along Lavinia's shore. Herminius smote down Aruns, Lartius laid Acnus low, right to the heart of Lausulus Horatius sent a blow. "Lie there," he cried, "fell pirate, no more aghast and pale from Ostia's walls the crowd shall mark the track of thy destroying bark. No more Campania's hinds shall fly to woods and caverns when they spy thy thrice accursed sail." But now no shout of laughter arose among the foes. A wild and wrathful clamor from all the vanguard rose. Six spears' lengths from the entrance halted the great array, and for the space no man came forth to win the narrow way. But hark, the cry is, "Astur!" And lo, the ranks divide as the great Lord of Luna comes forth with stately stride. Upon his ample shoulders clangs loud the fourfold shield, and in his hand he shakes the brand which none but he can wield. He smiled at those bold Romans, a smile serene and high. He eyed the flinching Tuscans, and scorn was in his eye. Quoth he, "The she-wolf's litter stands savagely at bay, but will ye dare to follow once Astur clears the way?" Then whirling up his broadsword with both hands to the height, he rushed upon Horatius and smote with all his might. The blow, though turned, came yet too nigh. It missed his helm, but gashed his thigh. The Tuscans raised a joyful cry to see the red blood flow. He reeled, and on Herminius leaned for a breathing space. Then, like a wildcat mad with wounds, sprang straight toward Astur's face, through teeth and skull and helmet so fierce a thrust he sped. The good sword stood a hand's breadth out behind the Tuscan's head, and the great Lord of Luna fell at that deadly stroke, as falls on Mount Avernus a thunder-smitten oak. Far o'er the crashing forest the giant arms lie spread, and the pale augurs, muttering low, gaze on the blasted head. On Astur's throat Horatius right firmly pressed his heel, and thrice and four times tugged amain ere he wrenched out his steel. "And see," he cried, "the welcome, fair guests, that greets you here. What noble Lucumo comes next to taste our Roman cheer? But at his haughty challenge, a sullen murmur rang, mingled of wrath and shame and dread among that glittering van. There lacked not men of prowess, nor men of lordly race, for all Etruria's noblest were round the fatal place. But all Etruria's noblest felt their hearts sink to see on the earth the bloody corpses in the path of the dauntless three. And from the ghastly entrance where those bold Romans stood, all shrank like boys who, unaware, ranging the woods to start a hare, come to the mouth of the dark lair, where growling low a fierce old bear lies amidst bones and blood. 'Twas none who would be foremost to lead such dire attack, but those behind cried, "Forward!" And those ahead cried, "Back!" And backward now and forward wavered the deep array, and on the tossing sea of steel, to and fro the standards reel, and the victorious trumpet peal dies fitfully away. Yet one man for one moment stood out before the crowd. Well known was he to all the three, and they gave him greeting loud. "Now welcome, welcome, Sextus. Now welcome to thy home. Why dost thou stay and turn away? Here lies the road to Rome." Thrice looked he at the city, thrice looked he at the dead, and thrice came on in fury, and thrice shrank back in dread. And white with fear and hatred scowled at the narrow way where, wallowing in a pool of blood, the bravest Tuscans lay. But meanwhile, axe and lever have manfully been plied, and now the bridge hangs tottering above the boiling tide. Come back, Horatius!" loud cried the fathers all. "Back, Lartius! Back, Herminius! Back, ere the ruin fall!" Back hurried Spurius Lartius. Herminius darted back, and as they passed beneath their feet, they felt those timbers crack. But when they turned their faces and on the farther shore saw brave Horatius stand alone, they would have crossed once more, but with a crash like thunder fell every loosened beam, and like a dam the mighty wreck lay right athwart the stream. And a long shout of triumph rose from the walls of Rome, as to the highest turret tops was splashed the yellow foam. And like a horse unbroken, when first he feels the rein, the furious river shook his head and tossed his tawny mane, and burst the curb, and bounding, rejoicing to be free, battlement and plank and pier swept headlong forth in fierce career, headlong to the sea. Alone stood brave Horatius. Yet, constant still in mind, thrice 30,000 foes before, and the broad flood behind. "Down with him," cried false Sextus with a smile on his pale face. "Now yield thee," said Lars Porsena. "Now yield thee to our grace." Round turned he, as not deigning those craven ranks to see. Not spake he to Lars Porsena, to Sextus not spake he, but he saw on Palatinus the white porch of his home, and he spake to the noble river that rolls by the towers of Rome. "O Tiber, Father Tiber, to whom the Romans pray, a Roman's life, a Roman's arms, take thou in charge this day." So he spake, and speaking, sheathed the good sword by his side, and with his harness on his back, plunged headlong in the tide. No sound of joy or sorrow was heard from either bank, but friends and foes in dumb surprise, with parted lips and staring eyes, stood gazing where he sank. And when above the surges they saw his crest appear, all Rome sent forth a rapturous cry, and even the ranks of Tuscany could scarce forbear a cheer. But swiftly ran the current, swollen high by months of rain, and fast his blood was flowing, and he was sore in pain, and heavy with his armor, and spent with changing blows, and oft they thought him sinking. But still again he rose. Never, I ween, did swimmer in such an evil case struggle through such a raging flood safe to the landing place. But his limbs were borne up bravely by the brave heart within, and our good father Tiber bore bravely up his chin. "Curse on him," quoth false Sextus. "Will not the villain drown? But for this stay, ere break a day, we should have sacked the town." "Heaven help him," quoth Lars Porsena, "and send him safe to shore. For such a gallant feat of arms was never seen before." And now he feels the bottom, now on dry earth he stands, now round him throng the fathers to press his gory hands, and now with shouts and laughter and sounds of weeping loud, he enters through the river gate, borne by the jealous crowd. I mean, the joyous crowd. There probably were a few who were jealous of his star turn there. They gave him of the corn land that was of public right as much as two strong oxen could plow from morn till night. And they made a molten image and set it up on high, and there it stands unto this day to witness if I lie. It stands in the Comitium, plain for all folk to see, Horatius in his harness, halting upon one knee. And underneath is written in letters all of gold how valiantly he kept the bridge in the brave days of old.
Stop. We'll see if that system works now.
Then out stepped brave Horatius, the captain of the gate. "To every man upon this earth, death cometh soon or late. And how can man die better than by facing fearful odds for the ashes of his fathers and the temples of his gods?
Oh, I know, by jumping off the bridge. That's better.
Hew down the bridge, Sir Consul, with all the speed ye may. I, with two more to help me, shall hold the foe in play. In yon straight path a thousand may well be stopped by three. Now who will stand on my right hand and keep the bridge with me?"
Well, you heard who would do it. It was Herminius of the Titians and Spurius Lartius. He was a Ramnian and very proud of it. And, of course, they were also lionized and generally admired in that semi-legendary time between the founding of Rome by Aeneas and Romulus and Remus and the end of the Roman Republic and the beginning of the Roman Empire. "It will be rerun again and again in your nightmares." Can't help that.
The best show that was ever performed was performed in this quadrant.
XLJKBTC10 Troy on KPFA 94.1 FM on your radio dial.
Now you know it's not KPFA. This is Radio Valencia. If it were real radio, that would be an infraction against the FCC to give the call letters of a different station.
Let's go back.
But remember, folks, we're a podcast and proud of it. So we...